Well, aren't you a regular Nancy Drew?
I learned that from the Nancy Drew detective.
Okay, go.
You think you can follow the clues and solve the case of the missing condiment, Nancy Drew?
He knows, I've read every Nancy Drew mystery ever written.
Nancy, please tell me you're joking.
Wow, you suck at this Nancy Drew stuff. You should get a new hobby.
My name is Carson Drew, and this is my assistant, Nancy.
Nancy Drew.
It's curtains for you, Miss Drew.
Nancy Drew strikes again.
A regular Nancy Drew.
Well, hello, regular Drews.
And welcome back.
Welcome back to another episode of Regular Nancy Drew. I'm your host, Becky.
And I'm Corey.
And this is an episode on the history of the Nancy Drew illustrators.
I'm so excited for this one.
I am too. Corey, you've done an insane amount of research.
Oh, well, thank you. It was really fun to do all this.
I'm glad that one of us enjoys research because I am terrible at it, and I don't enjoy the things that I'm bad at. So I'm really glad I have you. And I'm so excited to get into all of this with everyone.
So yeah. Am I. We've got some really good stories here, I think. Mm-hmm. Some really fun pieces of information that mm-hmm. I certainly didn't know before we started all of this. So
the Russell Tandy stuff?
Specifically what? Because that man had a crazy life. You could be referring to so many different things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to run through four of the major, in detail, four of the major Nancy Drew illustrators. I mean, should we just, do you just want to get into it? Or is there anything you want to say to preface?
I don't think we have like a three words. I know that we've done a three words for past history episodes, although I don't know, I guess just artists.
Well, I was going to say like epic, like fame.
Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess like illustrious, because they're illustrators and they're illustrious illustrators. So,
mm-hmm. illustrious illustrators. I like it.
Okay.
Yeah. I do want to preface just real quick. I need to do some special thanks because obviously I did not find all this information on my own. There are a ton of super, super well-informed Nancy Drew experts out there who, had some of this information available on their website. Of course, we talked to Jen Fisher about some of this. So, of course, the first person I want to thank here is Jen Fisher of NancyDrewSleuths.com, of course. All of her research that she has available on her website was tremendously helpful when I was putting this together. Also, Jeffrey Lappin, I don't know if you guys are aware, but he is like the main reason that anybody knows as much about Russell Tandy as we do. He has done an insane amount of research going back like 40 years into Russell wow. Tandy and his life, and actually spoke directly to the family and so was able to publish information about him. And so that's the basis of where I found a lot of the Tandy information. Also, Jennifer White of SeriesBooks.com, James Keyline of Stratemeyer.org, Robert Finan of NancyDrew.info, Leah Shangral Fox of NancyDrewWorld.com. And then I also read a book called The Nancy Drew Scrapbook by Karen Plunkett Powell, which had a lot of information about the illustrators as well.
Very cool.
And then before we actually jump into the history part of things, I want to just really quickly give a very super, super brief information, just a refresher on the Stratemeyers, just in case. Hopefully by this point, if you've been listening to us for long enough, the Stratemeyers need no introduction, but just in case anybody needs just a little quick refresh, just because we are going to refer to them later in the story, I don't want it to seem like it's coming out of nowhere, obviously. So back in the late 1800s, Edward Stratemeyer, who was an author and obviously a big mystery fan as well, he founded the Stratemeyer Syndicate, which was the first and at the time only company that was making books exclusively for children. Of course, they were published by Gross and Dunlap, so he is responsible for obviously Nancy Drew, the Hardy Boys, the Rover Boys, the Dana Girls, the Bobbsey Twins. The list goes on and on and on. And unfortunately, Edward Stratemeyer died just 12 days after the release of Nancy Drew, leaving his daughter, Harriet Stratemeyer Adams, which She was pretty much running the company at the time with her sister, Edna. So we'll refer to them a little bit later in the conversation. But right. Yeah, other than that, yeah. I think we're ready to get started unless there's okay. anything you want to add.
Well, just to say that if you guys want more information on that whole story, you can listen to our earlier episode that we did. I think it was called Will the Real Carolyn Keene Please Stand Up? I don't remember yep. what number it was.
It was number 5.
But we talk about that because we actually cover an amazing book, Melanie Rehak's book, Girl Sleuth, which is I also would recommend to anybody who's interested
oh, yeah.
in the history of Nancy Drew, which is such an interesting read. So,
gosh,
yeah.
so long ago that we did that. That was only our 5th episode. And so much has happened since then.
Yeah.
And I've personally learned so much more about Nancy Drew just even since recording that episode. So
yeah,
I love doing these history episodes. I think they're always so much fun.
They are so much fun. Okay. So to start our story of the Nancy Drew Illustrators, we will start at the very beginning. In the beginning is Russell Tandy. Russell Tandy was born in Brooklyn, New York in 1893. He attended an art school called Art Student League in New York City. And he was both an artist and a musician. And he did have a bad case of pneumonia at the age of 15 that left him partially deaf. But that didn't stop him from, you know, continuing his love of music. He found work as a band director or trumpet player, and he was also a musical ghostwriter. And then in 1917, he graduated from art school and he started regular employment as an illustrator, largely doing the art for product packaging and fashion advertisements for companies like Sears, JCPenney, Saks. And then sometime in the 1920s, he published his first and only book called Tandy Babies, which is a collection of portraits of children. Then at some point in the 1920s, Tandy gets married to Jesse Kennedy. They have 2 sons together, Russell Jr. and John. And then, yes, of course, there is a little fun fact with this. The CW show gave Tiffany Hudson's, her maiden name is actually Tandy as a reference to Russell Tandy. Of course, the show features her sister, Laura Tandy, but of course, Russell Tandy did not actually have any daughters. So
I had to look that up. I was like, that would be so cool if he actually had daughters named Tiffany and Laura. But no, that was just for the show. No. Anyway.
We can pretend in our mind.
Yes.
And then in 1929, Tandy was hired by his longtime friend, Edward Stratemeyer, to do illustrations for different books in the Syndicate series. And then the same year, Stratemeyer submitted the names of Russell Tandy and another Syndicate artist named Ernest Townsend to Grosset and Dunlap to maybe do some of the covers for the Nancy Drew series. And Stratemeyer sent Grosset and Dunlap samples of both of these artists' works. And he selected some covers to kind of like show like, hey, this is kind of what they do, the art that they do. And those covers were 2 Girls and a Mystery that Townsend did. And then Kate Martin's Problem, which is the one that Tandy did. And then Grosset and Dunlap ultimately chose to hire Tandy as a staff artist. And when you look at those covers, you can definitely see kind of really the early inspiration for Nancy Drew and Tandy's muse, quote unquote muse.
Yeah, we don't know who the muse was, that he probably yes. just took Kate because they liked that image yes. and used her for Nancy.
With the very like 20s look, the blue, the cloche. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's very obvious.
Yes.
And then another potential inspiration for Nancy at the time was the work of French artist Maurice Millière. And he was an illustrator for fashion advertisements in the 1920s. And then he started making, in the 20s, he made these figurines of the women in his illustrations. And it became really popular, especially with soldiers in France in World War II. World War I. Sorry. When the soldiers returned home, his influence kind of spread throughout the U.S. from their exposure to him in France. And then he has this very famous Zephyr sculpture, and it looks exactly like Nancy Drew in the cover of Secret of the Old Clock. So
literally, guys, if you swap the purse for a clock, it's the same thing.
Just
it's flip
her around, it's the exact same. So it's theorized that this could also be a really big influence on Tandy at the time.
Do you know anything about Millière's other work?
is it, it's like pinup stuff, right?
It's boudoir pinup stuff. Yeah. Like this, if essentially this was like softcore porn.
Yeah.
And no wonder soldiers lonely right. in France really liked it mm-hmm. at the time. And obviously the Nancy one is not risque at all. Yeah, she's fully clothed, very modest looking, but yeah, got very, very popular for that reason, which is like the most scandalous thing yes. that you could associate with Nancy Drew, that yeah. like that's sort of the origin, even though it's not definitely, but it's like, it's just because it's associated. Right. It's so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's interesting to think, okay, well, like the ideals of like what men were sexually attracted to mm-hmm. informed what we considered to be like beautiful person. Mm-hmm. That's what we want Nancy to look like. Yeah.
Yeah, the ideal look for a 16-year-old girl. Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Tandy did the covers for Mystery Stories number 1 through 10 and then 12 through 26. Hold on. Wait a minute. Why not number 11?
Mm.
Who did book number 11? We'll get there. Mm. We'll get there. I promise. He did also do the fronts piece, the internal illustrations, and the end papers for all those books 1 through 26. So 11 included. It was just the cover itself of 11 that Tandy did not do. He also actually designed that iconic Nancy silhouette. So we have him to thank for that image, which obviously got used pretty much. I mean, is still being used mm-hmm. present day. We still use that silhouette, even though she's been updated and she wears pants now. And she, you know, yeah, I will also say that the internal illustrations actually stopped being included after book number 13, which was Mystery of the Ivory Charm, and did not resume until Nappy. So we actually have a pretty big gap in time, which I didn't even realize this.
Yeah.
But I think I sort of kind of knew in the back of my head just because we've read some books from that time period. Right. And it's like, wait, where are the illustrations? They just stopped doing them for some reason for a while. So Tandy actually did work on another of other Syndicate series titles as well. He did Hardy Boys books number 24 through 29. In his process, reportedly, he would read every single book before he started working on his art and would personally decide what scenes he wanted to depict on the cover or in the internal illustrations, whatever it may be. He worked primarily in watercolors, and he actually did all the lettering on the covers. He did that hand lettering for That's both wild. The title and like by Carolyn Keene. He painted all that himself. A little bit about his personal life here. Tandy was reportedly, I'll say, quote unquote, very fond of alcohol. he was a frequent drinking buddy of both Ernest Hemingway and Salvador Dali.
What?
Illustrious illustrators. This man is just like randomly famous with or randomly friends with all these famous guys, and Edward Stratemeyer, BT Dubs, is right. also one of his besties. And also his prized possession was supposedly this couch that he'd gotten from Al Capone.
Oh my God.
I couldn't find any more about this story. I need to know, why were they friends? Did they just know each other? Was Al Capone happened to be selling his sofa one day and Tandy happened to get it? Like, what happened here? I have no idea. Just, I think that that's so funny.
He's just a legend, you know?
Yeah.
Just hush, whispered tones talk about Russell Tandy's couch.
Mm-hmm. Like, what? This is so random. I don't know. Anyway. Then in 1937, we have another inspiration for Nancy, Grace Horton, who works as a model, and she was also heir to the J.M. Horton Ice Cream Company, which was really big in New York around this time. She began serving as Tandy's model for Nancy Drew. So he would have her come in, pose, and then he would paint her onto the covers. Some people think that she was always his muse, but she was not born until 1920, meaning that she would have only been 10 years old at the time of right. Old Clock. So it's likely that she wasn't the model until around the time of Whispering Statue. So we don't know exactly, but we know she was definitely too young at the start, but later on.
Well, that's also so interesting to think about when you think about Whispering Statue in and of itself, which the mm-hmm. plot of is about like this like beautiful statue mm. of a woman, and Nancy just happens to look like her.
Uh-huh.
And so it's very interesting to think that maybe, like, you know, Tandy could have been reading that thinking like, you know, who could I base this off of? Oh, mm-hmm. no, this really attractive girl, like it could be her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway.
Anyway, we'll fast forward a couple of years here. Book number 16, Clue at the Tapping Heels, is published in 1939. And this is actually the first Tandy cover to feature Bess and George. I'll say they appeared on the cover of book 11, but of course that one was not Tandy. So that's not his first one with Tandy or with Bess and George on it. None of the other Drew crew members ever appear on any Tandy covers. Just Bess and George. We never see Carson. We never see Ned. Nobody else. Of course, there are some other people that appear on the covers. We see suspects. We see police. We see, like, the old lady on the cover of Larkspur Lane. Like, we see other people. It's just Bess and George took a while to show up, and then we never see any of Nancy's other friends. So, thought that was interesting.
So also interestingly, in 1946, Mystery of the Tolling Bell comes out, and that's the first book that is published without Tandy's hand-painted lettering on the cover. And yeah, so you wrote that the history of Nancy Drew formats is extensive enough for its own episodes, which is very true. So we're not going to talk about that too much, but essentially there are two different types of mystery story book covers. There's the ones with the dust jacket and then the ones with the picture cover. And then the dust jacket books, or these are, we're at least talking about U.S. copies of these books. I don't know too much about the
foreign editions. Is a whole other topic in and of itself. Who knows? Yeah.
But so the dust jacket books in the U.S., those are typically blue or sometimes blue tweed hardcover books that just has the title and then usually also has the Nancy silhouette on the actual book. And then the art just appears on the dust jacket itself. But then the picture cover books don't have a dust jacket, and then instead they just have the art printed directly onto the cover. And then the picture covers weren't actually created. It didn't start getting printed until 1962. For books 1 through 22, the dust jacket books have a white spine. And starting with Tolling Bell, the books had a wraparound cover, meaning that the art extended onto the spine. And apparently that is because in the mid-40s, during the war efforts meant that there were restrictions on the materials that book packagers could actually use for printing. And so there was like no other option except to use a lower quality paper, which tended to yellow quickly. So instead, they chose to extend the width of the cover art and do away with the all-white spines on the dust jackets to avoid that problem so they wouldn't yellow. Very cool.
Kind of clever.
Mm-hmm. And so that decision is also what prompted the syndicate to start using a standard typeface instead of the hand lettering for the covers. I guess it was just easier to produce that way. And so Tandy would just paint the image and then the typeface was added afterwards. And that also allowed for titles to be changed during the production, right? So like in case they're like, oh, we don't want to title it this anymore. We're going to title it something else. And then also that could be easily translated to foreign books, which obviously are going to be, the title's going to be in a different language. So that is what they actually still do today. So very, very fascinating.
Yes. We'll fast forward a little bit more here to 1949. This is when Tandy actually stops producing art for the syndicate. And we think this is likely due to financial reasons, although we don't know for sure. His last book for the syndicate, or the last book for Nancy Drew that he did at least, was book number 26, which is Clue in the Leaning Chimney. Supposedly, Gross and Dunlap repeatedly asked him back, like anytime they produced a new Nancy, they're like, hey, do you want to come do the cover? Do you want to come back now? How about now? And still, every time he said no, they kept asking him actually up until the time that they started revising the book. So they did try for quite a while, but ultimately it was not worth it to him. They were only offering him $100 per cover that he did. I don't know about like for like internal illustrations, if he made any additional money for that, but that's pretty low. Today, in today's money, that would be about $1,280. Russell Tandy and his wife, Jessie, later divorced. Actually, was because she was cheating on him with one of his artist buddies, or one of his musician friends, I should say.
Scandal.
Yeah. In the 60s, he moves to Sarasota, Florida with his new wife, who is also an artist. Actually, her name is Irene Weil, or Irene Weil Tandy now. And then in 1962, they completed work on their dream home in Florida. Sadly, he only got to live in it for just a year because in 1963, he died in his sleep after a long string of health issues. And then very shortly after his death, his home in Sarasota caught fire and destroyed all of his work inside. Today, the only surviving pieces that we, you know, confirm still exist are ones that Tandy had previously like gifted to someone. And usually in most cases, it was like a relative or something. Jeff Lappin, who I mentioned at the start of the episode, he attempted to track down some of the original cover art, but found that Gross and Dunlap had either returned all of Tandy's work to him or had just destroyed whatever he had given them. Lappin also speculated that in the 1980s, the Syndicate archives might have still housed some work. But again, he wrote that in the 80s and the Syndicate records have changed hands many times. So we don't really know what became of anything that could have been in their storage. Also, Lappin uncovered a story about a disgruntled former employee of Gross and Dunlap's that may or may not have had the opportunity to steal some of Tandy's work when he left the company. So we don't know for sure if he did or did not steal, but he definitely had the opportunity. And so that could explain where some of it went.
Wild.
So today, the only confirmed surviving pieces of Tandy's work are 5 oil paintings that don't have anything to do with Nancy Drew, 2 sketches of Grace Horton, one of his models, we think 7 covers of Nancy Drew, and then a portfolio of some of his earlier fashion advertisements that he'd done for like Saks and stuff.
Wow.
So today, most of the surviving Nancy Drews are in private collections, so it's difficult to know if there are more than this out there. Hopefully, I certainly hope that there are more out there than this, but we definitely know that Old Clock, Hidden Staircase, Bungalow Mystery, Shadow Ranch, Sign of the Twisted Candles, Mystery at Moss Covered Mansion, and Secret in the Old Attic definitely still exist. Jen Fisher says this on her website, but in 2009, the Shadow Ranch painting sold in auction for $9,500. And in 2018, the Old Attic painting sold for $35,000. Yeah. So a couple named Robert and Posey Huebner actually acquired the Shadow Ranch painting for their private collection, but it currently hangs in public. It is alongside Jen Fisher's collection, which is housed at the Toledo Public Library. So it's got a very, very nice little spot above the fireplace there. And you can go see it in person if you want to do so.
So cool.
Yes.
Okay. So if, you know, we learned all that stuff about Tandy, that's great, but we still don't know who did number 11. But there are a few theories. So the first theory is that it could have been Irene Weil Tandy, Tandy's wife, and she was supposedly an artist who also worked under Tandy, so it would make sense that she could maybe have taken over doing that work for her husband if he was, you know, busy with other projects. But you can't really find any good examples of her work, so it's hard to kind of make that comparison. Also, another theory is someone named Pelagie. How do you say that name?
I don't know. I'm so sorry.
Doane? Don?
P-E-L-A-G-I-E, last name D-O-A-N-E. I'm not going to try to guess. I'm going to get it wrong. I'm so sorry.
And she was a well-known illustrator of children's books at the time, and she did some of the Judy Boltons, a lot, among other stuff. Another theory is that it could have been Norman Braley, who's also a respected illustrator. He actually did the covers for the Outdoor Girls series by Laura Lee Hope. Did she do the Bobbsey Twins? Yes, she did the Bobbsey Twins.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. And so supposedly some of the letters that were found in the Syndicate archives about the cover for Book 11 referred to the artist as a he. So that could potentially, it's more likely that it was him than one of the other suggestions. There is another male artist that it could have been. It could have been Gerald McCann, and he was the artist for some of the Dana Girl covers, but there's not a lot of evidence pointing to that. And then also it could have actually been Russell Tandy, but he just was never like credited for the work, but that seems really unlikely because the style is different than his usual work. And also Tandy signed all of his covers and number 11 was not signed. So, fascinating.
So those are just the names that I saw thrown around the most often when I was looking into this. Maybe there's another few names out there that I didn't catch, but I think, like I said in there, Norman Braley is probably the most likely candidate. And that seems to be the general consensus from as far as I could tell. Yeah. And I did throw in some pictures there just to get your opinion, just to show some examples. Obviously, our listeners can't see this.
Yeah. But I mean, it'd be interesting. We could probably post them on Instagram whenever we release this.
Oh, episode. True. Yeah.
But I can see, I mean, it's tough, right? Because a lot of the art around that time is depicting of like the figures in the book, right? Mm-hmm. So of course they all look similar because people all dressed the same and in general, you know, had the same kind of like aesthetic look, right? I don't know that I think that the Norman Brayley cover looks the most like that of all of the ones that you compiled. I think the Pelagi Doan one looks like it.
It's really hard to tell.
And also, like, when you put that name in there, and I saw that name, at first I didn't know the gender of that person, because it was a, you know, wasn't a common name.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And so I was like, maybe someone could have known that as the name of the illustrator, but not been, like, personally aware of who they are. And considering it was, you know, the 40s, or sorry, this was 11, so it would have been the 30s, mm-hmm. right? I mean, a lot of people assumed that meant it would have been a man. And even then, even if they were unknown of the person's gender, they probably would have still said he, like, yep. because they used he kind of interchangeably.
Right.
So I don't know that them saying he is that much evidence that it actually was a man. And
that's
a good point.
I didn't even think about that.
I think that the Pelagi Doan, like her work, looks a lot like it. I mean, like the hair is a little bit different, but the shadow work on the outfits is the same.
Mm-hmm.
The shadow work does not look the same on the outfits as on the Norman Brayley cover and the Gerald McCann cover.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
It's interesting.
And
if you guys have any opinion, let us know, because I'm very curious to know what other people think.
Anyway.
Sorry, what were you going to say about the colors?
Well, just like the colors, like you can see it, I guess, a little bit in the Gerald McCann cover. And it's hard because, you know, I mean, of course, these people have a lot of work, right, to compare it to. But like, I don't know, in the Clue of the Broken Locket, in that cover, you see the green, the blue, and the red. Like those are those very bright standout colors, right? Almost primary colors, almost. And then you see very similarly in that cover of the Clue and the Patchwork Quilt, you see the pink and the blue. Like it's just very contrasting in a way that the others aren't. And I just think, I don't know.
That's a good point. Yep.
I don't.
We may never know, but I would love to find out, love more information on this.
But yeah, that's pretty much the information that we have about Russell Tandy.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to move on to our next illustrator. Do you want to take it, or do you want me to?
Sure. Yeah, okay. I can go on with Bill Gillies here. Unfortunately, his time with the Syndicate was the shortest of our three artists that did the main 56 books. So this is a pretty brief section here, but November 2nd of 1911, William Sheldon, nicknamed Bill Gillies, was born in San Francisco. He and his wife, Mary Agnes, had two sons named William Jr. and Sheldon. Wonder where the inspiration for those names came from. in the 1940s, he produced cover art for Collier's Magazine and Saturday Home Magazine. And by this time, he and his family were living in Connecticut, where he was actually one of the founding members of the Westport Artist Group and the Portrait Group of Westport. So very active in, I guess, working with other artists and working with this scene. He actually commuted to New York from Connecticut for work, where he happened to make friends with Edward Stratemeyer, who I think of as kind of just like a Jake Hurley real life. Well, you know how Jake Hurley had the penchant for just like making friends with random famous guys. He's kind of a real life that, I feel like. But
it definitely seems like it paid to be friends with Edward Stratemeyer.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. So eventually he's going to start working for the Syndicate, right? So in 1950, he creates his very first cover art for what was at the time the next three books in the series. So Tandy stopped at number 26. So Gillies is going to do 27, 28, and 29, which were published in 50, 51, and 52, respectively. Gross and Dunlap actually at this time also asked him to redo the cover art for the first 11 books in the series, except for number 10 for some reason. And this is just because they wanted to modernize Nancy. You know, at this point we are, 20 years out from when we were originally published. So we want to update her hairstyle, her fashion sense, all of that kind of stuff. So apparently he based his Nancy off of his wife, Mary Agnes. So that's, I guess,
so
his,
sweet.
I guess he got her to model for him or something. but yeah, it is very sweet. He is also the one who designed the emblem on the spine that is commonly seen on the picture covers nowadays, that features Nancy in profile looking through her magnifying glass, and it's in like a circle surrounded by the words, "A Nancy Drew Mystery Story." Yes, that one right there. So that is Gillies' credit there. That's he came up with that one. So let's go back to book number 10, though, Lark's Brilliant, for just a second here. It does not have a Gillies cover, but there is some speculation that Gillies actually did make a cover for that book, but it was just never printed, or at least it wasn't printed in the U.S. So Leah Shandra Fox of NancyDrewWorld.com argued that the U.K. edition of the book, which was published by Samson Lowe, and whose artist we don't know who actually did that cover, she argues that that was Gillies. So her theory is that Grossen Dunlap, that Gillies did the cover for Grossen Dunlap, that they were going to print it, but Grossen Dunlap ultimately passed on it because Nancy's skirt was too short for their liking and showed just the ittiest, bittiest little bit of thigh. So they passed on it, and then eventually somehow it worked its way across the sea and gets picked up in the UK for publishing there.
That's so funny.
So I don't know. If you look at this, I think looking at the cover for this, it looks like Gillies' other style to me. Mm-hmm. So I definitely believe it. What do you think?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And I can definitely see why a publisher at the time would have an issue with the cover. Mm-hmm. Because of the way that Nancy is like crouched in the grass there. It's not the front leg that the is the issue. It's not the knee below. It's that little bit of the like kind of up the skirt action going on. And it's certainly not, it's not scandalous by any means. And you look at this today, you'd be like, I don't see anything here.
I didn't even notice until it was pointed out. So yeah.
But in the 50s, I could see like being like, you're basically underneath her skirt.
Yeah. An upskirt of Nancy. No.
This is not a porno. So yeah. Yeah, I can definitely see that. Yeah.
Yes.
Especially, I don't know, the sweater. There's something about the collar and the sweater, the way that, I don't know. It does look very Gillies.
It does, yeah. And her facial expression looks a lot like his other work as well.
And I mean, of course, it's possible. Yeah, of course, someone who is making a Nancy Drew cover is going to make it look like the rest of them, probably at the request of the publisher. And so could be really inspired by Gillies in making this. And so we'll never know. But man, that just stinks, though. Like, come on, you guys, keep better records.
Right.
We want to know. Someday someone's going to want to know this information. Yeah, so.
You want to take it with the last half of Gillies' contributions here?
So, yes. So around the same time, Gillies also did many of the covers for the Hardy Boys and several of the Ken Holt mystery covers, which is another syndicate series. Of the Nancy Drew covers in total, Gillies did 13 over the course of 3 years.
And 14, then, arguably, if you want to count the British one.
But unconfirmed. And then in 1977, after his time with the syndicate, Gillies moved to South Carolina, where he started specializing in animal and wildlife illustrations. And he also did some portraits by commission. But apparently he reportedly enjoyed doing landscapes of Hilton Head Island. And then later in life, he became an art teacher and developed expertise in hand lettering. And he even created his own font face called Gillies Gothic. And then he passed away in April of 2000 at the age of 88. So very cool. I mean, not cool that he passed
away. Not
cool.
No, of course.
But he had a very cool life and sounds.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sounded very very nice. So after Gillies, we move on to a new illustrator who is, I think he's my favorite, to be honest, is Rudy Nappy. Of course, he's probably my favorite because most of his
covers,
what
we grew up with.
Right, are what I'm familiar with. But I also just love his style. And so Rudy Nappy was born Joseph Rudolph Nappy on February 12th in 1923, just outside of New York City. And he served in the Army in World War II, and then he attended the Art Students League of New York. Yes, that's the same place that Tandy went. That's so cool. And then in 1951, he gets married to his wife, Peggy, and they have two daughters, Lynn and Susan. In 1953, Grosset and Dunlap asked Nappy to take over after Gilly's departure, and his first Nancy Drew ended up being number 30, Clue of the Velvet Mask, and he continued to produce the art for every Nancy Drew, nearly every Nancy Drew, or no, every Nancy Drew.
Yeah, every new Nancy Drew.
Oh, every new Nancy Drew, sorry, through number 56. In 1954, Nappy brought back the internal illustrations, like you mentioned, for number 32, the Scarlet Slipper Mystery, right, because those had stopped as of 1937, so he brought those back. And then in 1957, when The Haunted Showboat was released, there was a printing error on the cover. And this is the first Nappy cover to feature Nancy, Bess, and George together. And so it seems like Nappy felt that having two blondes and a brunette wouldn't allow Nancy to be distinguishable enough on the cover, right, as our main character. So he decided to add a tint of Titian to her hair, but because of this printing error, the colors were accidentally darkened in the image to the point where Nancy appeared to be a redhead. And originally, Harriet Stradmire Adams was not pleased by this choice because she was
that
not...
That is a nice way to put it.
Right. I think if you listen to our previous episode about this, Harriet Stradmire Adams was definitely very particular about Nancy's image, and definitely, you know, always wanted to be consulted. And so because she was not consulted in this decision, even though it was really just an error, so it wasn't like it was really intentional, right? But she wasn't consulted. She was very unhappy. That is until the syndicate began receiving overwhelmingly positive feedback at this change in Nancy's hair color. Like, fans even wrote letters to the syndicate being like, oh, we're so happy that Nancy is a redhead. I'm a redhead, you know, all this stuff. And so from then on, Harriet incorporated the Titian hair into her writings. Yeah. So that's so funny and so sweet and such an interesting, I mean, no wonder we're always so confused about what Nancy's hair color is supposed
to
be.
We finally have an answer today.
Because the redhead thing was an accident.
Who would have thought? Who would have thought? Just a random mistake. And it's like, no, why would you do this? Oh, wait, it works really well. Let's keep it.
My God.
Love it. Love it.
So that's why it was so confusing, because on some of the covers, she is a blonde. And then on the later cover, she is a redhead. And then it's not because there was any like choice. It's just it just happened. And then so then when the revisions started happening, it all makes sense now. Yes. It all makes sense.
Yes. Well, that is perfect that you mentioned the revisions, because that actually brings us to our next point. In 1959, of course, they started revising their first 34 Nancys. Of course, that's all that was out at the time, was the first 34. But they didn't actually have Nappy revise the art at the same time that they did revisions. It actually took a couple more years. They didn't actually start doing, or they didn't ask Nappy to start revising the art for their previous covers until 2 years later. And he actually started with Lilac Inn for some reason rather than Old Clock. And so he's actually going to continue redoing all the previous art in the series while also producing the art for the newest book, for the newest cover at the same time. For some reason, though, he never did a new cover for 6 or 7, so Redgate Farm or Clue in the Diary. There is no Nappy cover for either of those books, so there's only two covers. They each only have a T&D and a Gillies, but so strange. Mm-hmm. I don't know why he never did those two. Maybe they were just really happy with the Gillies one. I don't know. Maybe it was representative enough that they decided it didn't need an update.
Let's see. Sorry, which ones did you say? Redgate
and Clue in the Diary.
Clue in the Diary. That's so interesting. Yeah, because Nancy is bright blonde in both of those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's just interesting.
Well, if you go to the Nappy tab on this thing that I have put together, Velvet Mask, she's still very blonde. It really isn't until, what was it, Showboat. But then after that, it stays.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm looking
at least for a while.
I'm looking at the revisions of the Nappy, with the Nappy covers. And yeah, Nancy is a redhead in all of those. And so it's just, yeah, it's just interesting. You feel like, why would you skip the two where Nancy, I don't know, she's just uber blonde. I mean, like, they're great illustrations. I mean, they're all great illustrations, you know?
Yeah, of course.
So yeah, it's just, that's just interesting. Yeah.
So then in 1965, they asked him to yet again redesign the covers for books 10 through 24. So now he's revising his own art at this point, just because they want Nancy to look even more current by this time. It was in 1967 that he first employed his iconic vignette style as opposed to illustrating a specific scene from the book. And it was also around this time that we started seeing new font faces on the covers. I don't know if anybody out there is really interested in typography at all, but we see Tandy, of course, did his own hand lettering. And then Gillies had one font face that was used on all of his art. But then with Nappy, we start to see a bunch of different fonts. There's like three or four different fonts with Nappy that I didn't even realize until I specifically started to look for it to try to notice a pattern. And there's really not one. It's pretty all over the place, honestly. Okay, so by the time we got to book number 35, though, we stopped revising the art, I guess. So books 35 through 56 each only have one cover art. And for some reason in my mind, I thought that once he started employing the vignette style, he stopped doing the specific scene style, that he just kind of continued it from there. But that's not true. When I lined everything up chronologically, I see that it's a pretty good mix of the two. So he kind of just like jumps around in his style, I guess, just whatever that particular book was. Some scenes called to him, where maybe other books he wanted to do kind of a more representation of different themes and major mentionable items from the book. I don't know. So Nappy by this time is a very prolific artist for the Syndicate. He was also the Hardy Boys cover artist during this entire time period. So for every single Nancy Drew book cover that he painted or revised, he was also doing a Hardy Boy at the same time. So he was also doing as many Hardy, well, not quite as many. He did 64 Hardy covers. And then he also did a bunch of like various other like one-offs for other Syndicate series books. Nappy reportedly liked to also recruit his family members for help with his illustrations, and then usually recruited either of his two daughters to pose as Nancy. His technique involved photographing his models with whatever props he could find to like simulate that scene, and then he would work off of the photograph itself. Nappy reportedly never actually read any Nancy Drew novels, but his wife Peggy loved to read these books. And in fact, she would read every single Nancy, and then she would make a little summary for him, and then he would just read the summary, and then together they would decide what would be the best scene to put on the cover of the book. So that's Peggy so was actually a lot more involved in this process than maybe she gets credit for, because yeah, she was a pretty big contributor to his process, which I think is really, really sweet and really, really cool. 1979, he actually ends his time with the Syndicate after book number 56, which is, of course, the end of the original mystery stories anyway. So in total, he did 74 Nancy Drew covers. And that, of course, includes all the ones that he revised. During his time with the Syndicate and after this as well, though, he also worked as a cover artist for Pulp Fiction novels. And I didn't know this, but by the late 60s, he had already established himself as one of the greatest Pulp Fiction artists of all time.
Wow.
In fact, so much so that his body of work is so, so massive that it makes his Syndicate work look like just like a footnote in his life. And even like when he was asked about it later, it was like, yeah, I'm a Pulp Fiction artist. Oh, yeah. I did do some Nancy's back in the day, didn't I? So the fact that this guy did 74 of them and it's still just like a little blip on his radar compared to all of the other massive amounts of work that he did. It is crazy. Yeah. And then sadly in 2015, he did pass away at the age of 92, just 3 days after his wife, Peggy, passed away.
That's so sad.
So sad.
I mean, it's so, so sweet and so sad. It's like The Notebook, like dying in
bed. Dying of a broken heart just days after.
Wow.
Oh, so that's the end of Nappy and the end of the original 56. But of course, the mystery stories did not end there.
No, they did not, Corey.
And of course, we talked about her a little bit at the convention. So we know a little bit about her already. But do you want to take it from here?
Yes. So we wanted to talk about Ruth Sanderson. Ruth is amazing.
Yes.
We love her so much. She was born in Massachusetts in 1951, and she graduated from Pear College of Art in Connecticut in 1974. And she already established herself as a respected illustrator. She's done so many children's books, and I think we talked about this a little bit already previously. But then in 1979, she started doing cover art for the Nancy Drew series. She did one for number 57, The Triple Hoax. And then she continued doing art until number 72, The Haunted Carousel, which I'm sure a lot of you will be familiar with as well. and then she did a lot of other work for the Syndicate as well, including several Bobbsey Twins titles around that time.
Only 28 years old when she started for the Syndicate and was like already a well-respected illustrator.
Thank you for doing that math, because that's insane.
28 years old, younger than we are now. Imagine getting a call from Harriet Stratemeyer Adams. Like, can you come paint Nancy Drew for us?
I'm always so in awe of people who have talent like this, because it's right? just like talent that like speaks for itself. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? That it's that's incredible. That's wow.
Yeah.
So amazingly, Ruth has over 100 book covers credited her by the Library of Congress. She is the co-founder and is currently an associate professor for the MFA in Children's Book Writing and Illustration program at Hollins University. And that is the first and only program of its type in the US. Like, there just like is no other like children's book writing and illustration program. Yeah. So
you guys heard that right. If you want to go learn how to be a children's illustrator, you got to go get that education from Ruth Sanderson herself, because mm-hmm. she founded that program. How crazy is
and
that?
And early in her career, she did Nancy Drew covers. Like,
right.
So, yeah. So, like, just like a wild and wonderful mm-hmm. story and history to just like, I don't know. This is what I mean, like illustrious. Like, all of these people are like their talent. And like the amount of work that they do is right. like so insane.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the sheer number, but then thinking, like looking back at it, you know, like of like what they actually look like of like actual skill. It's just crazy. It's just crazy.
And I didn't write it in there, but Ruth is, of course, still doing art today. Yes. And she's continuously publishing more wonderful pieces of art. And I think last year, the year before, sometime since the pandemic started, because it's all just been one long year since then, right? She actually was awarded an honorary doctorate by her alma mater. So I guess she's Dr. Ruth Sanderson now.
Yeah. Sorry.
Which is even cooler.
Dr. Ruth Sanderson.
Oh, you didn't know that. I don't expect you to
no.
know that.
But I mean, I want to call her by the appropriate, give her the appropriate title, the appropriate accolade.
Of course. Yes. So I don't actually know, and this would have been a really good question to ask her at the convention when we met her, but I don't know if she designed the cover itself or if she just painted the art, because of course her art is surrounded by a really incredible design with the, like mm-hmm. little frame around the title and then the frame around the art itself. So I don't know if she's responsible for that iconic little frame style that of course inspired yeah. our logo. But then we have a lot of other artists. From there, it started to be less consistent sure. with the artists. After Ruth Sanderson's time, they did kind of jump around. I think Paul Frame took over after Ruth, but yeah. then we didn't have like one person who did a bunch in a mm-hmm. row. So I, of course, we don't want to go through hundreds of names for every single person who's ever painted a Nancy Drew cover. That's just way too much. And nobody wants to sit here and listen to a list of names anyway. But
right.
After this time, of course, we did move into the menstrual editions of the mm-hmm. Digest. So we saw new art get revised at that time. And I think even the earlier, earlier Digests. So after 56, but still before Ruth left the Syndicate, I think that they have like several cover arts, like three or four different ones for each of the books.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, we move into the, what is it? The Wanderer editions. No, sorry. It was the Wanderers
Aladdin.
First.
Wanderer, Minstrel, Aladdin.
I said Minstrel yeah. a second ago, and I meant to say Wanderer. After Wanderer, then we move into the Minstrels, which also got updated cover art at some point. I think those are largely the ones that have like the little square in the corner and the titles in the square. Is that right?
Yes. So mm-hmm. like this is a Minstrel.
Yes, exactly. And then after that, we move into the Aladdin editions, which get a lot more modern in their art. Mm-hmm. They have like the Nancy silhouette over the entire cover, and then the title is kind of on Nancy's silhouette, and then we have a smaller image of just the art. So yeah, those got revised pretty often. So we have this kind of tradition of revising the cover art, producing a new Nancy, current modern day styles and hairstyles and everything. But we don't really see that with later series. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the current series, obviously, there's not been enough time mm-hmm. for that to happen yet. But I think the files all pretty much had just one cover per file. I do know that they did a limited run with the 1995 show. They did a few prints where it was like Tracy Ryan's picture printed on. So they did an alternate cover, they really, truly updated the art for the whole series. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, after the mystery stories ended, we have the Girl Detective series. I don't know too much about the actual artists themselves, but this might be a good time to just talk about the cover art itself. Sure. Because that was a very big departure from what we'd seen previously with like hand-drawn illustrations and beautiful, rich paintings. Now we have this like pop art style. And actually, I say I don't know who the artist is. That's Nappy's Nancy.
Yes.
On the cover.
Yeah. So we kind of talked about this a little bit before when we've talked mm-hmm. about the cover art during our Girl Detective episodes. And it's interesting. So they do like this kind of zoomed in version on Nancy's eyes and Nancy's face with like this overlay of like red dots. I think it's in an attempt to make it look kind of modern and technology-ish. In the early aughts, mm-hmm. that was a big kind of style. And so I think this was an attempt to make it look like that. And then typically on the covers, I don't know about all of them, but like on most of the ones that I'm aware of, they have a photo of like a photorealistic.
It looks like a stock image, honestly.
Zoomed in, typically very zoomed in picture kind of underneath the heading with Nancy's eyes and mm-hmm. lips. And so, so very different than, the rest. Probably an attempt to modernize, update. I feel like all art at that time was very abstract. So I think it was maybe just following that, that trend, we were not interested in realism very much in that time. So that's probably why, but.
Well, the series started out that way. And then, of course, they kind of moved to the trilogy format. And at that time, they started using like a picture of a real person on the covers.
Okay.
And this, like the fashion sense and everything kind of is giving 2007 Emma Roberts movie mm-hmm. with like everything's plaid and sweaters. And mm-hmm. I don't love it. I think it's a little bit, it's not Uncanny Valley. It's just, I don't know this girl. It doesn't feel like just an artist representation of Nancy. It's just like some random girl.
Well, yeah, when it's a photo, it's like it doesn't leave anything to the imagination mm-hmm. where I feel like art. I mean, I guess it doesn't leave anything to the imagination either, but it's not because it's not photorealistic. Mm-hmm. There's room for, I don't know, your own imagination. I don't know another way to say it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And maybe that's, my young person perspective, right? Because we grew up with the internet. And so we're used to cameras and, digital cameras and stuff like that in a way that someone who was maybe born a while ago, was not raised that way. And so maybe that's just me, but there's something that's so much more romantic and sparks the imagination more of like, actual art. Photos are art too, but illustrations or a different medium than a photograph mm-hmm. would.
I feel like if you're going to use a photograph of an actual person, it needs to make sense. Like with the Tracy Ryan putting her on the cover to promote the series that it was out at the same time, that makes sense. And we can connect that. Like, yes, she plays Nancy. It makes sense. Mm-hmm. But this is just, it felt kind of random to me.
Well, so I think you should to illustrate my point, the later Aladdins, these are the ones that like I was really used to like checking out from the library. So this is really what I was, raised on mostly. They have a very, it looks almost photorealistic, mm-hmm. but it's not. It's very clearly like someone's worked from a photo in these cases. But this, like this art style in particular, like I'm looking at this particular cover. This is for Danger on the Great Lakes. And this artist's rendering of like probably what was, you know, a photo of this model is so much more interesting to me than just a photo of a model would be. I don't know what it is about it, but like it's very slightly photorealistic, but mm-hmm. it's also, I'm not an artist, you guys. I don't know what I'm talking
about.
No,
it's okay.
It's also not.
Right.
So yeah, so I just love that take on it, because I think that there is a way to get that kind of like modern look without mm-hmm. Making it a photo, you know, without just taking a photo.
Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with photos, and there's nothing wrong with working off of a photo. There's something that's just different about having an artist's interpretation of Nancy.
Yes. Yeah. Because it's so interesting to think about, like, you know, what people are seeing when they look at Nancy or when they look mm-hmm. for Nancy. And so thinking about like an artist seeing that and having different, you know, ideas, or even taking it from a model and then transforming it into something else, something happens in that process of transformation that doesn't happen when you look at a photo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, as we know, the Girl Detective series did not last very long mm-hmm. anyway, and we moved over to the diaries after that, which, again, I don't want to just sit here and list names because we've had quite a few diaries cover artists mm-hmm. By this point, but I think that style is just beautiful. Mm-hmm. She does look a lot younger than what Tandy, Nappy, or Gillies ever portrayed Nancy as, but I love the, like, watercolors to it. I just think that they're so pretty.
Mm-hmm. I have said this before, and I will say it again. I love all of the cover art that the diaries do, but I particularly love the box set that they made for the 90th edition or the 90th anniversary of mm-hmm. Nancy Drew. Just so gorgeous. I mean, like Simon and Schuster really know what they're doing at this mm-hmm. point. I feel like whatever art director is responsible for these covers understands. And yeah, I agree. I think they're just gorgeous. And I mean, even the ones that aren't that box set, but like, yeah, the illustration of Nancy, it's a very modern interpretation of mm-hmm. Nancy, but there is something so exciting and mysterious and romantic looking of the illustration itself, you know, like, yeah, they just get it. The girls so that good. Get it, so get it. Girls that don't.
There you go. Alrighty. Well, I think that pretty much brings us to present day. I mean, that's all that I've got to say about it. Anything else you wanted to add? Or
no, I just want to say thank you, you know, to everybody out there who's ever illustrated a Nancy. I think, you know, like you were kind of saying with Nappy, how he became so, you know, famous that and just had such a large amount of work that his Nancy Drew stuff was just kind of like a footnote.
Right.
It's just, I think that probably maybe a lot of people don't realize the impact that their art has on the world. Mm-hmm. And just personally, just for me, like the art of Nancy Drew has really, just really created an impression on me from, mm-hmm. you know, when I was young to now. And just like how much joy I find in it still today, even after 30 years of my life, you know. I just want to say thanks for everyone's work, because it's just amazing and beautiful. And even if I don't like the particular cover,
yeah, sure,
I still appreciate it, you know what I mean? Because I just thinking about Nancy Drew over the course of the years as like this big joint endeavor, it just mm-hmm. touches so many lives, and I just think that that's really cool. So
yeah.
Yeah.
And I think this is a lot of credit to Edward Stratemeyer as well, to how well he recognized exactly what you just said, how important it is to have something that is truly beautiful on the cover of his books, because he knew it would pull readers in.
Yeah.
That they see something. What are those sayings about judging a book by its cover? It's true. Like, if you see a cover art and it's beautiful and it makes you want to read more, if that's what pulls you in, so be it. Like, I think he understood that, and it was really, really important to him that he had an artist that really understood Nancy and really could portray her in what was just an absolutely magical, beautiful way. She just, I mean, everything about these covers just make it look just so idealistic. I don't know, just make the world look so beautiful. And I think that was his goal, obviously, but it also turned out really, really well.
Yeah. I remember so often looking at Nancy Drew covers and just thinking, like, I want to be that. Yeah. I want to be there. I want to do that. I want to be Nancy. And that probably wouldn't have happened, at least not to such a great effect, without any and all of these illustrators. So,
right. Yeah.
Yeah.
What an incredible legacy to leave behind as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's that, regular Drews.
Yes, thanks to you for joining us on this one. It's a lot of fun.
And I guess we need to tell you what it is that we are covering next, huh?
Yes.
So next up, you know, this was, I guess, technically episode 80.2, 80 part two. But next up, we are going to be covering another little section. We're going to go back to look at some more Nancy Drew adaptations. Yay. So we're going to be covering all kinds of stuff. But next up, some of you might be very excited to know that we are going to be revisiting the CW show.
Yay! I'm excited.
We're going to be covering just episode two. We're going to keep moving forward and trucking along the series. So join us next time to talk about that. Yeah. See you then, regular Drews.
We'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to Regular Nancy Drew. Email us at regularnancydrew@gmail.com.
If you like this episode, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe.
You can also follow us on Instagram at @regularnancydrew and Twitter at @regularnd.
You can also support us on Patreon. Patrons at the $3 level vote on upcoming episode topics and get exclusive access to our Scoop Sesh series.
And all patrons receive early access to each episode as well as weekly bonus content.
And to all you regular Drews out there, thanks for listening.